Sacred place, which word?
Dure.
Situated by.
Vari.
Water. Ayanam.
The reservoir.
Yirkam. Holy place.
Lavanyam.
Beauty.
Kesha.
Air.
Dharanam.
Yeah.
Ugalam Bharata Ingadaya Swartha, the goal of life, Satyatve, and so-called truth. Dhashtam, Dasati, Eva, simply, He, indeed, Daksham, expertise, Kutumba Bharanam, maintain the family, Yasha, fame, Arte, for the sake of, Dharma Sevanam, observance of religious principles. The sacred place will be taken to consist of no more than a reservoir of water located at a distance, and beauty will be thought to depend on one's hairstyle. Filling the belly will become the goal of life, and one who is audacious will be accepted as beautiful. He who can maintain a family will be regarded as an expert man, and the principles of religion will be observed only for the sake of reputation. In India, there are many sacred places through which holy rivers flow. Foolish persons eagerly seek redemption from their sins by bathing in these rivers, but do not take instruction from any of those people who reside in such places. One should go to a holy place seeking a spiritual enlightenment, and not just for ritualistic burial. In this age, people tirelessly arrange their hair in different styles, trying to enhance their facial beauty and sexuality. They do not know that actual beauty comes from within the heart and the soul, and that any person who is pure is truly attractive. As the difficulties of this age increase, filling one's belly will be the mark of success. And one who can maintain his own family will be considered brilliant in economic affairs. Religion will be practiced, if at all, only for the sake of reputation, and without any essential understanding of the supreme personality of God. actually college is a good thing for most of the country. They describe the yoga ladder in great detail. And they made the point that it's actually Kamakanda is a very advanced practice of civilization. Of course, when we're talking about the Bhakti in relation to Bhakti, Kamakanda and human activity is at the lowest of the world. So when I read that, I was very intrigued. I was like, this is very interesting. Because when you read in the Vedas, not that I read the Vedas, but our commentators and others explain, who have read the Vedas, that there are many enticements given. For example, if you do such and such, ritual, particular activity, you have a beautiful spouse, a beautiful wife, wealth, 10 children, 5 sons, whatever, on and on and on. There's so many enticements. And they explain that this is still within Vedic culture. And the reason why the author of the Vedas, which is Krishna himself, interjects these things in the Vedas is because those individuals that have material attachments, they want the Vedas, the author of the Vedas, Krishna, wants these individuals to think about karma. Because if they think about karma, then they'll think about how their actions today will result in, result in fruits tomorrow. And by thinking about our behavior and being responsible for our behavior, we're actually looking into the future. And the next logical thing to think about is, well, if I have a comfortable life the next life, but that life is also going to be comfortable. Then I have to look at life after that. And at some point, you think about eternal happiness. So it's actually a very important part of Vedic culture is to inspire those who are not spiritually oriented into thinking about being responsible about their behavior. Some years ago, I was watching documentary. It was actually a very interesting documentary. We went live, and some of you may have seen it. It was produced by a Christian organization, and they wanted to make the point that morality is. You can't actually be a moral person without believing in God. Because we often hear the argument, and I've heard it myself many times, that, I'm agnostic, I'm atheist, I don't really believe in God, but I believe it's important to have a good life, to lead a good life, to be a moral person, and to have principles. So, this is kind of like, this documentary is in response to that particular stance or perspective. That it's actually not possible to be moral unless you believe in God. And unless you believe, and it's not possible to believe in eternality and soul unless you believe in God. And it's actually a whole logical progression from taking this, to the end. So I'm not going to do that now. But one interesting, intriguing thing that came out of that documentary for me was they were taking interviews with people, and they would first start off with very simple questions like, would you, cheat on the math test in school, or would you, steal your friend's comic book and break it, or, would you steal music from the internet, things like that. And what they found is that people who believe in God, they said, yeah, I'm not good, and I just probably shouldn't have done it. And those, who didn't believe in God, they just said, well, of course, why not? But then this really blew my mind, was, and this was like a serious question. They weren't just like making a joke out of it, they were asking a serious question. So at the kind of the end of this progression was, if someone gave you $1 million, and I gave you a little package of Arsenal or something for you, and you knew that, this person kind of cheated on their husband or whatever, but just a total stranger, would you put this Arsenal in this bar and to kill this person if he gave you $1 million and guarantee you that you'll never, that nobody will ever find out? And the people who believe in God would say, of course not. They said, wow, it's $1 million. And the God checked on his life. Or the God checked on his life. Because I'm killing a person. But then the people who didn't believe in God, they'll be like, I don't know. They're like, how about $5 million? $10 million? And the point is like, alright. It's like $10 million, and anyways, the guy cheated, on his wife, and that's it. And then, some people would say, like, I'll do it even if you pay me, even if you didn't pay me. Just take it out. I'm not really doing it justice, but it really had a profound impact on me how belief in God had so much to do with the morals that we have, the morals that we keep. Because if we don't have a conception of truth that's beyond the temporary, that's beyond mechanistic, that's beyond material, then there's no conception of that morality. I was thinking this morning about how Kobe Bryant, telling the story of a conversation he had with a scholar from Russia, I think it was. It was a scholar in Russia. And we were talking about, there's a scientist talking about what happens after death. And the scholar was saying that after death is nothing. There's, just void. And our life is just this kind of life. And life and God is over. Because our life consciousness is part of our body. When Prabhupada gave this example later on, just see that the villagers in India who don't have a PhD, and yet they believe that what they do now is going to impact their life in the future because they believe in the outcome. So the point is that simple for the simple and complicated for complicated, even though the scholar had a PhD, he couldn't grasp the concept of the life after life. And it's such an easy thing to grasp that there's life after life. Not just one grasp, no matter how educated they are. So, last week, I was talking about how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was really stressing this point of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, inward facing, external facing, introspective, which is external, exterior. looking at value and meaning versus looking at external appearance, and looking at inner happiness versus external happiness. And it's a theme that Buckminster Fakir talks about throughout his writings over and over and over. Actually, there's one principle that he talks about, Saragrahi, which is one of his most important contributions. Saragrahi is the seeking the essence of everything. And actually, Ramamukhya, one of the gurus, gave a beautiful quote in 1925, saying how everything is ultimately spiritual. That there is some kind of level up, there is some kind of controversy in the movement within a couple of these things. Saying that material is shown in spiritualism, because we just think that body is spiritual, but that actually everything is ultimately spiritual. And that's actually a very important point, that everything is spiritual. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he really stressed this point on Vaishnava as a bond value. As a bond value. Because his Sarvabhi is always seeking the essence of everybody, and everybody's relationship, and all the teachings and the scriptures all over the world. But essentially, the truth is one. So the external appearance of someone in Vaishnava, how Acharyas sometimes make the point that you will see devotees, devotees with empty mouth, and demons actually, in disguise, and then you also see people that look like ruffians. It's a very heavy statement. I mean, there's demons looking around the world, thinking about it, and they have some hidden agenda. But the converse is true, that devotees exist. But you can't even talk to them. I was thinking about the story of Hindu Bhagavad Gita. I was actually reading that story this morning. And this one detail that I forgot, but he would actually, the description of his home was, there was a hookah. Couldn't you hear that? Smoking from a hookah. So they had a hookah. So Pindarik Vidyanidhi is originally was the father of Ramayana Krishnadani. And he had silk and clothes and curtains and his father and his hookah in his room. And of course the Dalai Pandit, he was very austere. He was very I can't remember who was it, Mukunda's idea for Vidusa to adopt the Dharma. So we got him over and he seemed like that. And then he quoted that verse from the Bhagavad Gita about how such a Dharma person is thinking that he goes wrong with the ultimate position of the remorse and the living. And when he heard that verse, he just broke out and he started ripping his clothes, actually. He started ripping his clothes in ecstasy. So we can't, in that example, we can't identify who the Vaishnava is based on the quote-unquote morality and the attraction to sense gratification. I was thinking how one of the core principles is Sadachar, which is our behavior. But even our behavior can be external. We've seen that so many times in our great acharyas. Their behavior is inconceivable. We're talking about Sadhya Sintana. Thank God for that Sadhya Sintana. I have something to talk about. How We're talking about how Srila Prabhupada would say that if you don't feel like paying obeisances, you should pay obeisances. Because by paying obeisances, you actually feel like paying obeisances. But we're making the point how we have to think about why we're doing what we're doing. I was listening to a class by my guru, and he said that if we go to the temple because we're thinking that if we go to the temple, people will be thinking why we're not going to the temple, then the result will be they won't think that we're not. They won't be thinking why we're not going to the temple. Or if we decide to go to Mangalarti, because if we go to Mangalarti, then people won't be thinking that this person didn't believe. So, then Krishna reciprocates and no one will think that we're Buddha. But, my Guru Maharaj made the point that why are we hanging on to these petty desires? That if we have such small, teeny, petty desires, then Krishna will reciprocate with those. And we'll get something bigger that Guru Maharaj is going to go for. This is the glass. But if we actually have the proper desire, I want to please Krishna, I want to purify my heart, then Krishna will reward us with a pure heart. Krishna will reward us by the Vaishnavas being pleased with us. Krishna will reward us by keeping us alive. So we actually have to be very attentive to our desires. That the root cause of everything that we do ultimately is desire. And Bhaktivedanta, where we say we have to take inventory. What is going on inside of us? So, I mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of his main contributions in Saragaha and Bhagavan. So, this morning I was reading an essay that was written about one of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's most important contributions. And actually, scholars that have studied the life of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they actually claim and propose, and many others also, that one of the most important contributions of Bhaktisiddhanta is this concept of seer and seen, Vidvishya and Chai. And this is actually a very profound contribution that he gave to the world of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because when we are conditioned, it's very natural to think of ourselves as the enjoyer. And everything that we see around us is the object of our enjoyment. But does that bother us? That's not it. I said that in spiritual life, there's so much enjoyment. There's so much beauty. There's so much sensual stimulation. There's so much love. So much rasa. We're reading it right now in the summer. We're reading about the nectar of devotion and all the symptoms, ecstatic symptoms of the pada, and the bhavas, the hay bhava, sanjali bhava, sakta bhavas. It's very, very beautiful, and the experience is so unbelievable. Like the one book that was written by Thakur, and it explains the 14 stages of bhakti and nishtha and bhava bhakti, prana bhakti. And when you read it, you're just like, my God, what's in store for us? And the path of bhakti just makes, you know, our desires and anxieties and tribulations and material seem so insignificant. And Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj made the point that during Vishnu Vichara, seeing the sea, that even in the spiritual world, when you're having a spiritual experience, you have to have this concept happen. You have to really imbibe your mood that I am to be enjoying and not be enjoying. Even in the spiritual world, where the variegatedness is infinity times variegatedness of this situation, where the pleasure is infinity times, where the beauty is infinity times, where the rasa is infinity times, where the relationship is infinity times, even then, in order to enter into that world, We have to see ourselves as seeing. We have to see ourselves as being enjoyed. Not being the enjoyer, not being the seer. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he elaborates this extensively in the Amrita. He talks about how that the love and the goodness of Krishna is where the gopis are actually seeing the world through Krishna's eyes. Think about this. They are actually projecting themselves in Krishna and seeing the world through Krishna. Not just thinking about Krishna's pleasure, but experiencing Krishna's pleasure through Krishna. And that we are, and that the gopis were simply mirrors of Krishna's happiness. This is how deep the relationship is. And actually, our acharyas actually give the example that the Rasa Leela, it's like Krishna looking in the mirror. You know, this Rasa Leela. Right, when you wake up, Krishna looking in the mirror, he sees his own reflection. It's as if Krishna's beauty is the rasa, it's just the more and more you read about this, what does that mean? What was his Gopal had Bhakti, what does that mean? Had Sajjana Poshana, right? That was his prerogative. So if you read some of the articles that Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj has written in the Sajjana Poshana text, in fact, over and over and over again, seeing and seeing that we are not objective, we are subjective, that we are reflective. Where he alludes to or references in Vishnu Vichara. I think I really mentioned this in the previous class, but they're actually quite entertaining. But so many pastimes, running out of time. There's one pastime, this one gentleman, he was demanding a dog journey. He was a very kind of guy. Had a great emphasis on his position in society. And he went to the Gaudiya Math and I should be respected. So I'm like, where's my dog journey? I think Dr. Sivakumar is talking directly or told to something. So that is the Gulab Jamun gonna enjoy you? Or are you gonna enjoy the Gulab Jamun? And I was asked actually a few weeks ago, I read this one quote of Dr. Sivakumar. He said, if we take Mahaprasad to appease our hunger, or if we take Mahaprasad because it tastes good, we are a massive sin. We're just a massive sin upon sin upon sin. So it's like, oh, we have it. Every time I'm taking Mahaprasad to alleviate my hunger, I'm a massive sin. So Bhakti Santamaj, he said that when we honor Mahaprasad, we should actually be meditating. This Mahaprasad is enjoying you. And it's really hard. I'm not enjoying the Mahaprasad, I'm going to actually enjoy you. There's another story. This is actually a famous story. Bhakti Santamaj. Mahaprasad is not different from Krishna. Krishna, we're not enjoying Krishna. Krishna's enjoying us. That's the whole point. Right? Krishna's the enjoyer. The supreme enjoyer. That's the whole thing about Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Because there are places in the spiritual world where, like, we hear in scripture that in Samyukta, the same form, merging, but the devotees, the highest devotees, they actually reject these five forms of liberation. So, the gopis, okay, that's in Vaikuntha class. Those five forms of liberation are in Vaikuntha class. The gopis in Goloka, they actually reject all of those five forms of liberation. And that's why they don't want to have the form of Krishna. They want to have the form of the gopi because they want to be enjoying it. It's actually really, really important to understand is that we are being enjoyed. I was reading in Krishna Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the 10th canto. He was explaining how in the Gopi Deep, or it was actually not in the Gopi Deep, you know the five chapters, or five principal chapters in the 10th canto, which talks about the highest also of the love of the Gopis and Krishna. And when Krishna abandoned gopis, there was symptoms of Udma, which is complete madness. And in that bhava of complete madness, the gopis at one point, this is actually considered the highest point of madness. It was when the gopis were saying, "I am Krishna." Now that saying, "I am Krishna," is worlds, universes apart from someone saying, "I'm Krishna," who is an impersonalist. They're universes apart. Yet externally, they're saying the same thing. "I'm Krishna," and the gopis saying, "I'm Krishna." And when the gopis are saying, "I'm Krishna," is because their bhava, their mood, their meditation, was they're meditating on Krishna so intensely that the only thing in their consciousness was the form and the beauty and the love and the ecstasy of Krishna and his happiness. That they could think of nothing else except for Krishna. where they actually, that the ecstasy was so intense, they actually got to the point where they said, I'm a fisherman. I'm a fisherman. Of course, but immediately after that ecstasy hit, they came out of that, and they saw themselves in the world. But there's been tons of ways to make this point where I think, do you have a microphone? Actually, you're expanding upon what I was just saying earlier about Krishnadas Kaviraj. His explanation was that the gopis, they're experiencing Krishna's enjoyment. And when they experience that Krishna's enjoyment, it expands their happiness. And Krishna seeing the happiness of the gopis, Krishna's happiness increases. And then the gopis' happiness reflects off of Krishna's happiness, and their happiness increases, but Krishna's happiness increases. So the only point why we're happy is to give happiness to Krishna. But we should, that part of the Adilila, Krishna Kaviraj, it's so deep. It's the highest philosophy that ever mankind has ever seen. The point that you made is the more you know, the more it is expected of you. I remember hearing a class, another class, he said, someone was asking a question of someone who takes prasad and some things, and that's all they do. And they don't want to go beyond that. Basically, the answer is that it's as you learn more, and if you're actually learning, you'll want to do more. So it's to be expected that you, in the beginning, of course, all you do is take your shot, and that's how a lot of people become devotees. But the idea is that it's supposed to grow from there. It's supposed to expand from there. So, but it depends on how much you know. So now that you've learned more about Krishna consciousness, and that we have what it means to go back to God, that the whole point of Krishna consciousness is that complacency is the enemy. That in the beginning, thinking for shy is wonderful, but it can work. And surrender more and more and more.
But my question is,
my experience with Bhakti
Sampradaya,
yeah. You know, I've read a lot of writings by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and his mood, he says things, my understanding is he says things to nudge us to get more, to become more and more serious in our Krishna consciousness. It's not meant as a judgment, but also the context of who he was speaking to also is important. So many of these quotes were directed towards brahmacharis. So the mood of the acharya is that the acharya is never satisfied. He's never satisfied. He's a disciple. The greatest it can do. So it's pushing. And we all know Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is very heavy. He said some very heavy things. But that heaviness is mercy. It's pure mercy. It's for love. Deep love for his disciples. Is that what you agree? What are you looking at?
Certainly what I agree with. Thank you for bringing this point about the child. All of the body, all along. I do. Probably morning, afternoon, evening, whatever. Anyway, but so it's a very important point, and I was thinking, how is it? Okay, I understood the point of the shooting for sense and also for being rebellious, but I understood when you mentioned that it's not that we enjoy prasadam. Not prasadam enjoyed us, and then you're saying how Krishna. So I really got some understanding of that, and I wanted to share that, was that Krishna only enjoys one thing, and that is rasa. It's rasa with his devotees. And so while we're taking prasadam, what it means that Krishna is Krishna enjoying us, Mahaprasadam enjoying us, is that when we take the prasad with relishing it, that, oh, this is Krishna, I'm so fortunate that I have Krishna so tasty, Krishna so, with that mood, that appreciating Krishna, then Krishna relishes. So it is for us to appreciate Krishna, that Krishna relishes that rasa that we are having as we take the prasad. So that was the thought that I had as how we need to take the prasad and how Krishna enjoys it.
Yeah, actually, more than us meditating on how Krishna is enjoying us, Darshan, it's more about the devotee relishing the meditation of how Krishna relished the prasad. So when we're taking prasad, we're thinking, how Krishna must have enjoyed this. So our enjoyment is through Krishna's enjoyment. That's big Vishavishad. The seer and the seen is that we're subjective. We are enjoying through Krishna. And Krishna, his experience is all that we care about. So what is Krishna seeing? What is Krishna smelling? What is Krishna tasting? Who is Krishna hugging? You know, that's all we care about. If we're suffering, you know, the 8th verse of the Shikshastra just fully encapsulates that. Who cares what happens to me? Because my happiness is whatever Krishna is experiencing is what I'm experiencing. If Krishna's happy, I'm happy. Even if somebody's cutting my body into many parts. But if Krishna's experiencing the pain, that's what I'm experiencing.
Prabhupada writes in the introduction of the Upadashamrita, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude followed. So it has a lot to do with your attitude. But just in case you're worrying about enjoying prasadam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he served prasadam, he knew his devotees what their favorite preps were. And it's described in Chaitanya Bhagavan how he would serve to each devotee what they liked. And he would just say, now just give me that And also, it says when he served prasadam, he couldn't serve small. He was like Vaisheshika. When he served with prasadam and Vaisheshika, he said, Vrindavan Das says, he would serve enough for 5 men on your plate. That's how Lord Chaitanya did it. So, but you have to have a devotional attitude and a submissive, humble attitude and know what you're doing. But not to worry that there's light eating them.
Yeah, and that actually, so this Vidyashivachar doesn't negate that, because just as we are thinking of Krishna's pleasure, Krishna is thinking of our pleasure millions of times more than we can think of. So, just like we're doing what we're supposed to do, but similar, Krishna's probably doing that. He's already seen the world through his devotees. Krishna's already doing that. But that doesn't mean, oh, Krishna's doing that, so I should do that too. I'm going to see the world through my heart. No. Krishna's seeing everything through his devotees' eyes. Krishna's seeing everything through our heart. Krishna's seeing everything through our nose. Krishna's seeing everything through our heart. But that doesn't mean we should see everything from our nose and everything from our eyes. We're seeing everything from Krishna's heart. Just like Krishna's doing for us, we're doing it for Krishna. That's Rasa.
I'm still going to read that, but this time I'm on number 4. The 4th one. So when we take the time, here's the master, that's how we make the dance. So when we're on, and you can talk about it sometimes, so that you can take the time to get through, but it's limited. It's just that if you honor the spiritual life,
many levels of understanding what you're talking about. Many levels. One is that this is the power of digestion and all living beings. So if you extinguish the power of digestion, you're definitely not getting to Krishna's presence. You're overworking. Another point is if if it were actually seen on it as the sun, there would be absolutely no waste in any level, and no gluttony in the world, and no desire to selfishly engrave in a private space, but good pleasure if you really want to engrave the sun. You pick up the biggest possible scene and feed the most mouths that you possibly can. And that gives pleasure to Krishna, and that gives mercy to being digested by his power on his hand level. Krishna loves that, yeah. And that's his function, okay? But another aspect more of the hero's aspect is beside him, Krishna's all aspects of his mercy, including chastisement, are expressions of love, and it should instigate recognition of him, which causes him to be loved by the person who recognizes him. And the reason why he bestows that mercy on others is that he recognizes him and loves him. And that's what surprises the
I remember Pani Vishwaguru told me one time that when he's in line for Pachana, and there's like Paneer Sabji, he actually asks for the Brussels sprouts and keep the paneer there and just give him the Brussels sprouts. That's how austere he is. Thank you. Dunta, Chimabhavata.